This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hang in there, it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to The Smiley Show. And if you are watching this on YouTube, we hope you are. You need to look no further than the shirt that Smiley is currently wearing to tee up today's guest. That is Chris Goderup. Super excited to talk to Chris. At the time of recording, 20th in the Ryder Cup standings, playing some of the best golf of anybody on tour in majors in the past couple months. And the presenting sponsor for this interview is our good friends at Ahead. We are talking trust-based relationships. Ahead builds and manages digital platforms that power the most successful organizations in the world. Their consultative approach, unmatched engineering, and innovative solutions combine to accelerate the impact of technology in every client they serve. Ahead's longstanding relationships are built on outcomes and experiences with both their clients and technology partners. You can learn more about them at ahead.com. So, Smiley, this is I got to sit in on this conversation as I get to do all of them. It was a really fun way to learn about Chris. You know, we talked about the origin story in Jersey, starting out at Rutgers, going to Oklahoma. What part of this interview are you most excited for the audience to kind of listen to and or watch?
Well, I think just getting to know Chris Goderup. I think so many people that watch golf, he's obviously an up and comer and a new guy for a lot of people. For me, I've known about Chris for a very long time. There, why do I have a Rutgers golf shirt? That should be your first question that you ask yourself.
Is
why do you own one of these? Because typically, I'm always in purple and gold if I'm going to be wearing a college, and red is not in our color wheel in this house with an Auburn wife and then an LSU guy.
State red doesn't sit well with me either. So yeah, it's a departure.
All right. So my college roommate, teammate at LSU, Franco Castro, brother Roberto Castro, used to play on the PGA Tour. He was the assistant coach at Rutgers and was kind enough to send me a shirt so I could support the Rutgers program while he was the assistant coach there. And of course, Chris Goderup just happened to be playing under the Rutgers program at the time before he transferred to Oklahoma. So Chris Goderup, big red guy.
And even that part of the journey I thought was super interesting about the factors that impacted the move in that COVID time and the way that he really and truly loved his time there, the decision he had to make that kind of launched the rest of his career development. So all stuff that we're looking forward to getting you to watch and listen. We'll waste no more of your time. Let's get right to it. Smiley's conversation with Chris Goderup.
Welcome back, guys. We got a great guest joining us today, Chris Goderup. Chris, buddy, good to have you on. It's been a great run. It's been fun watching you have all the success. And I must say, I'm not surprised. Ever since I played with you in Puerto Rico, I pretty much knew I needed to find a new career because I was going to be watching Chris Goderup play some high-level golf for a long time. So it's so good to see the breakout. It was coming. Congrats, buddy. It's been fun to watch.
Appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, buddy. All right, so you are from New Jersey, which isn't exactly the golf hotbed of America. So tell me about your childhood, how you got into golf, where you're from in New Jersey as well. Because I think it Little Silver is what I read. Is that little beach town in New Jersey?
Yeah, it's like there's like an hour stretch if you just drove south from there of like all beach towns and whatnot. But I mean, it's funny. Everyone says it's not like a hotbed for golf, but I mean, when you think of golf courses and golf, you think of New Jersey and New York, but it just for some reason, there hasn't been a lot of guys that have come out of there. And honestly, there's been more in the last 6 years than than the last probably 50 before that. But I grew up there, and you know, played a couple different sports, and I really loved it. I still go back in the summertime and try to catch the good weather when I can. And mm-hmm. It was a great spot to grow up, and where I played at my club there, it's just a great place. No other way to describe
it. What course you grew up playing?
Rumson Country Club.
Rumson. All right. What's the style of that sort of golf course? Was it? I mean, you're a bomber, so I kind of assume you had to hit a bunch of drivers growing up as a kid.
Yeah, it's not very long. It's probably 7,000 from the tips, but it's like as wide open as you can get. So I definitely grew up in not much fear of anything, which was nice. I mean, who knows? Maybe that was the reason why I hit it farther. It's just a great place. Like the flattest walk of all time.
Oh, great!
I grew up caddying there, and it's just a good hang. A lot of cool people there.
You know, like when you see a guy like Gary Woodland, Dustin Johnson, these two players, when I think of them, they're like super athletic, both played different sports growing up, like some basketball, and of course, both very long hitters. And a lot of times you see the translation for players that grew up playing another sport, find a way to hit the ball very far. Did you also grow up playing different sports other than golf?
Yeah, I played lacrosse as a kid. That was kind of my thing, and that's a Northeast thing, and all my friends played that. And I don't know, I mean, I think there might be some correlation just with, you know, you gotta have some good like torque speed and stuff like that and be able to rip the ball on net. But other than that, I don't know what the correlation would be, but it was just something else to take my mind off golf. And mm-hmm. you know, honestly, as a kid up until college, really I didn't take it seriously like kids do now. I hated traveling for it. I didn't understand why. And I was much more content just being at home and hanging out.
All right, what was your ball speed with the lax stick? Were you guy less on accuracy, more on the strength, and just putting, it's like the knuckleball coming at you?
Yeah, I played attack, which is like, you know, a forward in other sports, but like I just sat in like the left corner and would just catch and shoot. I was like a black hole, but I was pretty good at, I mean, pretty good being relative. I wasn't gonna be anything, you know, in college or anything, but like I could shoot it pretty hard. And I don't know, I can't remember what speeds we were getting, but like I could get, I think it was in like the 80 to 80 range, give or take. It would hurt if it hit you. I've gotten hit in the neck before. Oof. And it does not feel good.
Well, when'd you stop playing?
In high school, because in New Jersey, golf and lacrosse were the same season.
Which was fall?
Spring.
Oh, really? Golf was in spring in New Jersey. Yeah, I can imagine that was not great.
No, not ideal.
Who made that decision? I feel like that's the wrong call.
Someone that doesn't play golf.
I mean, is that have everything to do with just golf in the fall being really pure and the golf courses don't want to give up like tee times?
Maybe,
is that,
but we played a lot of like county courses, so I don't know. I don't really know. I'm sure it was just someone said it back in the day, and they're like, yeah, sure, sounds good. Probably an afterthought.
I can't imagine. I mean, because when would you start? March? Like March and up in the Northeast?
Honestly, maybe even before. Like,
Yeah,
it was a lot of like 42 degrees and not fun.
Oh my gosh.
All of our stuff, like New Jersey, like I talked to the guys in Oklahoma and whatnot and everywhere, like New Jersey high school golf was, you know, a joke compared to like everything was 9 holes, and other than like the major tournaments were 18, but like it was not a very, you know, big thing.
Well, so like what junior golf did you play? Was there mostly local stuff or did you play much national events?
I played like two AJGAs.
Only two?
Like two or three. I really did not like. There was only one in New York, I think, at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm doing that and that's it. Like, I don't like – like, I went to, like, Texas once and I shot a million. And I was like, I'm not – that was not worth my time or my – like, I hated the idea that my parents would spend money on me to go, like, travel and I'd play, like, you know.
So you had, like, that added pressure. So you just
– Yeah.
So you wore it a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, and I wasn't, like – you know, I wasn't, like, a world beater as a kid. So I wasn't – I didn't see, like – where it was going.
Yeah.
But I just played a lot of like, I mean, we were lucky too with New Jersey State Golf Association and MGA, which is the Met. like we played amazing courses and they had great stuff. And I played like the New Jersey Am, Met Am, the junior stuff. So that was kind of my like circuit as a kid.
I mean, you kind of strike me as a player, Chris, probably as like a junior that was either hot, like you're either on or you weren't on. Is this true? Oh, yeah. Like I just see like a lot of 83 68s in tournaments.
For sure.
Is that kind of what you were doing in junior golf?
Yeah, I would play good and then I would lose it. Like, it's funny. I have some swings on my phone from high school and like, it's amazing.
What's it look like?
Just ungodly long, like driver going back to my knees. Like the fact that I was even able to square it up is crazy. But I definitely was not a very like I would hit it nice some days and I'd like you said I'd play good, but like when I was hitting it bad it was ugly.
Was there a certain coach that kind of entered your in your golf career that kind of helped with just basic fundamentals to kind of get you to a point where you started to get more consistently to realize, okay, not only can I do this maybe in college, but I can dream about doing this maybe for a living one day?
Yeah, there's definitely levels to my like golf. At Rumson, we had a pro, Brian Gaffney, who was at the Whistling Straits. He made the cut, like, it was the PGA.
Yeah.
So he was a very good player, a couple US Opens. So, like, he was the guy that I would play with after work, and, you know, we would practice and whatnot. And there's actually a funny picture, my mom has it, of, like, I was practicing and my brother's, like, asleep on the mat next to me as a kid. But my coach that I work with now, I've been working with him since high school. So he's been, you know, we've had a slow kind of progression and both my college coaches too were very, you know, instrumental in the stepping stones that I took.
Yeah. And so you're obviously only playing, you know, local regional type of golf for you. You obviously ended up going to Rutgers, but did you have any other schools that were dream schools that were in mind, or did you always kind of want to stay a little closer to home?
You know, I can't even really remember, other than like I knew I was limited in my like my decision to play. Not that I was like going to be able to go wherever I wanted, like a lot of these kids now. But like the way I played and where I played, like I was limited to the Northeast for the most part because that's just, you know, where people looked. But I really only had an offer from Rutgers and Loyola Maryland. Those are like the two schools that I talked to really, and. You know, I loved the Rutgers, just joined the Big Ten at the time. I really liked Coach, and like I could see myself there and doing well. But like, it's funny, I you know, my family's not Rutgers fans now; they are. But like, you know, we never grew up being like, I'm going to New Jersey State School. Like, that's just it. Just kind of happened. I really don't have like a good reason other than I liked it and I had a great offer and Coach believed in me.
Well, that's awesome. And I of course, became a Rutgers golf fan when I guess this would have probably been your junior year. My college roommate, Franco Castro, brother of tour player Roberto Castro, joined the squad as the assistant coach. And he actually told me that he had a couple different offers of where to go be an assistant coach. And he mainly chose Rutgers because or really just have an opportunity to coach you. So I've known about you for a very long time. And luckily, because I know Franco, I also get a couple of inside tips on what to ask Chris Goddard in an interview. So one of the things he told me to ask was, how was Hammock Beach coming off of winter break freshman year? This is a golf course, I believe, that apparently maybe didn't quite go so hot coming out of winter break.
Yeah, I was always like growing up, you know, I didn't touch my clubs until after Christmas, usually from who knows when, October till. And like I'd always go down to Florida. I remember playing Medalist and like as a kid, and I'd just be like, I'm never coming back here. Like I'd lose 10 balls. And I was like, this is hell. But yeah, I've had a couple. There was a couple. Hammock Beach is where we played the Big Ten match play.
Oh, it is.
And it's a cool course, but there's, you know, there's some water holes and some houses. And I've struggled there. And then there's this other place. I don't think Frank was the coach when we were there, but we went to like the Slammer and the Squire.
Yeah. Down in like St. Augustine, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of an open course, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but we did a training trip there, and I shot 100 3 days in a row.
Stop it.
Swear to God.
Like, actually 100?
Yes. Like,
oh, man. Like,
it was – coach was probably like, this is – my life's over. Like,
oh, my gosh. Like, you were supposed to be the diamond in the rough. Like, the guy that hits it really far, you're going to figure it out. You know.
Yeah, and I was – it was funny. Like, looking back on it now, I think they played a Corn Ferry event there and, like, in COVID, and I saw the shot, like, 30 under, and I was like, holy crap. Like, it was crazy. It was like
– so what was going on? What was going on?
I mean, I was just hitting it all over the map. Like, any water, I'd find it. I can't even remember. Like, I can remember one tee ball I hit. It's like the ninth hole. There was like a pond that was 50 yards and then trees. And I'd hit it like into the trees right at the pond.
Oh, man. I got that shot. I got that shot.
Yeah. So it's just like, there's funny stories like that, like, where, like, you just look back and you're like, how is this even possible?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of players, especially at a young age, would put a lot more pressure on themselves and lose a lot of confidence. And apparently that didn't happen with you. So what was the key for you to kind of get back on the horse, keep at it, you know, not lose the faith, and eventually kind of get to where you started playing some better golf over the next couple of years?
Yeah, it's probably, you know, a little bit of what I said before, where, like, I went down to Florida knowing, like, this is not going to be good. Like, it was really just knock the rust off, like, sometimes more rust than I'd like. But it would take me a couple weeks / months to get out of it, because I really, like...
You didn't touch a club. Even, for how long?
I mean, 3 months, probably. Yeah. 2-3 months. And, like, in college, we started to practice more inside, and, like, and I got better coming into the spring. But, like... It was really just a, you know, I don't have like a good answer as to why I, you know, figured it out, kind of, but like I really just kind of stuck with it, and I really liked the grind of it. And I would always go, like, I would always go after class or whatever and just go to the range that we had on campus, and mm-hmm. I would just hit balls and go, like, not knowing what I'm doing, but like I loved going there by myself, hitting balls, and like figuring stuff out, whether it was made me worse or better at the time. But like, there's definitely that aspect of it, just a lot of, you know, hours just spent hitting balls. And and my junior or sophomore year into my junior year, I lost like 40 pounds. And that, like, for some reason kicked a lot of stuff into like the right gear.
Is that working out, just got diet better. What was
a mix of everything. I mean, I was very out of shape, which made it easier to lose some weight. But like, yeah, I just for some reason I kicked it into gear, and everything just kind of started clicking from there.
Man, that's interesting. Too many man sodas, you think, or what?
I in high school and like my freshman year, I'd play Call of Duty with my friends till like 2 a.m.
Okay.
Eating all sorts of crap, and, you know, and it just probably just, it didn't probably, it caught up with me.
So it's a little bit, it sounds like to me, just a dedication deal. Like, you realize, okay, if I want to play this at the next level, like, or just be a very good college player, I got to put the time in.
Yeah. And it was more, you know, I didn't go into school being like, I'm turning pro after school. Like, I just went in and like,
see how it goes.
All right, let's see how it goes. Yeah. See how it goes, really. And I think I started to see, like, all right, you know, I played good. I won, like, I played really good in the Med-Am one summer, like my sophomore year. And I was like, all right, you know, I just beat some like good players.
Yeah.
Maybe I am all right, like pretty good at this. So then I, like, once I started seeing some results on top of it, it definitely helped me like take it seriously.
Was one of the keys potentially that you realized that if I don't use the Velcro on my glove, that could be a huge key? Is that something that you figured out, or what's the deal with that? That's such an odd deal.
Amazing. It's amazing how fascinated everyone was with the glove. Like, it really was, like, as a kid, like, I have a super strong left grip, and as a kid,
it would always come up when it would always pop off.
It would crunch, like the Velcro would crunch, and I hated it. I hated the sound of it, and I was probably just cupping the out of my wrist. But I hated the sound, so like I would always chip unstrapped, and then I just eventually, half laziness, just would throw my glove on and just hit balls, and I just, you know, it's not coming off when it's on the club. So
I mean even Frankie told me that, like, you don't even like to tie your shoes. Like, you'd prefer to not have your shoes tied. So there seems to be some form of looseness factor that definitely suits you.
Yeah, I'm a big, like, just sweatshirt guy and gym shorts, and
They're a chain. They're the chain, man. Chain gang.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
what's on the chain? Is it one chain? How many chains we got?
I have two. I have one like white one and one yellow one. I wanted to get something and that was that.
It's a jersey thing, right?
I guess.
I need to get one. How do you think I would do? Can you pull it off?
Yeah. I mean, everyone's got one, whether it's
Oh, man. Well, tell me about just the end of your college career at Rutgers, because I think one of the things that I thought happened was that you spent 3 years at Rutgers, then you transferred to Oklahoma. But what I figured out was that you did four and then you had a COVID year, then you transferred to Oklahoma. So
yeah.
I guess where I want to go here is leading up into your senior year, you finish your fourth year at Rutgers. Obviously, you've had some success. Was there a decision to be made for you on whether you wanted to turn pro, or were you thinking about, man, I got unfinished business left in college?
No, there wasn't a thought of turning pro. I was not ready at the time. So it kind of was very COVID related decision. But my junior year at Colleton River, we played, it was like whenever COVID, like whenever everything got shut down.
Yeah.
It was like 2 days after that event. But at that event, I woke up one morning at like the day before the event, and I swear I thought I like banged my hand on like the headboard, and my hand was killing me. I literally thought I broke my hand in my sleep. Like I was fine, played a practice round, and then so I played the event, and then I get home and I had like a torn ligament in my thumb, and I had to get like a bone graft on my I had like a cyst on my thumb. So I was shut down for the whole summer, and then with COVID and everything, Rutgers or the Big Ten didn't play in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then the spring was still kind of iffy. But then I saw all these schools in like the South being like, you know, they were all playing and they didn't, you know.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know if this is going to keep going for another year. Like who knew at the time?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to finish out my 4 years. Like I committed to 4 years and I loved it there, but there was just too much, like a lot of uncertainty. And I was at the point where I was like, I was an All-American. I had my stuff, like I did cool stuff at Rutgers. And I was like, if I'm going to do this for real, like turning pro at some point, I got to go somewhere far away and so different. Because I kind of had like, not mastered, but like I knew the courses we were playing. I was going to play every event. Like, not that it was easy, but like I was very comfortable and I wanted to go somewhere where I was going to be challenged.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
When you and I had dinner right before the U.S. Open, which was a great night, by the way, it was right at the beginning of this run you've gone on. So I have to take a little credit here. Maybe you need to go to more dinners with me. But the thing that surprised me, Chris, was that when I asked you about Oklahoma, which is obviously a great school, but it wouldn't be the first place that I would guess a guy from New Jersey would go to unless he just liked the color red. How did you end up in Oklahoma? And you know, obviously Ryan Hibble's done an incredible job there. So, you know, tell me how you ended up there.
Yeah. You know, that year when I was transferring, I think them and Pepperdine both played in the national championship, and I knew Oklahoma was losing, you know, three guys that were very good players. And
mm-hmm.
I knew I could slot myself in nicely there, but I went and visited there, Pepperdine and Auburn all in the same week. And I know, like, people told me, like, hey, you got to check out Oklahoma. Like, Hibble's amazing. And the type of coach he was similar to my Rutgers coach. You know, more of, like, almost like a football guy. Kind of like, he'll get on you if you're doing something wrong. Which I liked. Like, I knew I wasn't perfect and didn't – I needed some tough love every once in a while. But I went there. I never thought I would end up there. And I went out – that was my first visit, and I loved it. And I went to the other ones, and I went home. Like, I'm going to Oklahoma.
Well, Frankie told me you have a New Jersey tat. So did you get an Oklahoma tat when you got there?
No. We had the – we had the New Jersey State logo on our shirts at school.
Yeah.
I was like, that'd be cool if I tattooed it on my back. I don't know if I'd do it again. Yeah, it's like right here. I don't know if I'd do it again, but it's cool. I have good reason for it, and
sure.
It's a conversation piece. Not that I have my shirt off around people that often, but
Tell me about Ryan Hibble and just y'all's or just your development over that year. You obviously make a great move, and it worked out amazing for you. You basically won the Heisman Trophy of golf for that year. You ended up at Oklahoma, so obviously things could not have gone better for you.
Yeah, it was just like a weird time where like everything seemed to be working in my favor with like. With COVID happening, everything being shut down, I was, you know, recovering from my surgery, and it really took me like a full year to get back to like no pain and no like weird feelings in my hand. And it kind of just like parlayed right into that year. And I really just kind of hit the ground running. You know, I remember the first qualifier, everyone was probably like, you know, screw this kid. Like, and then I ended up winning by like a bunch. And I think there I was like, I proved to myself. I was like, you know, coach told me first day I got there, he's like, we know you're good, like, but you're gonna have to earn it, and like, you have no guaranteed spot mm-hmm. on the team other than being on the team. So I was like, all right, I gotta go, like, this is not a joke. And so I just kind of figured it out a little bit. I played good, and it was nice too, because I had already graduated, so I didn't really take many classes. Like, I took what I needed to take, and I was going there for golf. So I practiced all day, and I really just liked the grind there. And
wait, what class did you take?
I don't even know. All I had to do was be eligible, so that was what I did.
Did you take classes on like riding the horse into the stadium, like the whole?
That boomers? Probably would have been better. That probably would have been better than what I was taking. I remember I went to one. I had one in person each semester, and I went to one. And I don't know if I should say this, but like I went to one. I'm like, I'm done. I'm not doing this. And so I just
I've already done my 4 years of school.
Yeah, exactly. I got good grades at Rutgers, relatively speaking, and I was like, I did my part. Like, I gave up.
I did my time. I love that.
Coach was like, just be eligible. You know, we know you're not here for academic boosting. But yeah, I don't know. I really liked qualifying. I really liked. It was very intense. Like Coach said, like qualifying is going to be hard, and you know. I think it helped like going into tournaments, knowing that I earned my place.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of just put some good tournaments together, and
sure.
You know, I kind of just started getting confidence. That was really kind of the only, it wasn't like I was a different person than at Rutgers. I just, you know, I kind of just put things together.
I have two questions that come to mind. One is the weather, obviously, you experience in New Jersey is going to be a lot different than the conditions you'll have in Oklahoma. You know, the wind is what comes to mind really in Oklahoma. You're a very low ball flight hitter when I played with you, and I noticed that on tour as well. Was that something that you've always had, or did you kind of develop this over time? Did you develop it a little bit more at Oklahoma? Just curious about that.
I kind of always had it. I do it way more now than I ever did. And it's probably because of playing in the wind all the time.
Yeah.
Really not a day where it's not windy here, but it's, I don't know, like, you know, I don't know when it happened, or I always liked moving the ball. Like when I was growing up, like I loved just like hitting a 30-yard slice, even though I could hit it dead straight. Like
mm-hmm.
So it's kind of just one of those things. And then once it started getting windy, I had to do it.
Right. So
I kind of just it kind of fit my eyes nicely. I always liked working it with the wind, and you know, it was just kind of one of those things that I never really thought of it. But now when I go play places, I'm just hitting like. Flighted shots everywhere.
It sounds like to me like you like to play the golf game very creatively, and so the second part of the question would be, was there a part of your game that needed work, or maybe that something that you're able to hide a little bit in the college game that maybe you kind of realized over time, okay, I needed to kind of develop more shots or more better technique in a certain aspect of your game?
Yeah, when I got to school, it was like 120 yards and in, like that was going to be my like wheelhouse. Like I've always been a good driver of the ball.
Except coming out of winter break.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, except down in Florida in December and January. But, like, I always, like, putting has always been my, like, not nemesis, but, like, I need to be – you can never be good enough at putting, one. And, two, I was not good enough at putting.
Yeah.
So we always worked on that. And Coach is one of the best putters, you know, of all time.
So that helped getting his advice, just picking his brain a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, like, you being around people that see things differently and asking questions and, like, picking things that you liked that you could use. And it was just – it was stuff like that. And I – and it was more the time, like a lot of time that I put in of like,
yeah.
I had these facilities and I could get better and I had the time to do it and mm-hmm. I wanted to do it. And I think it was just kind of like a good place at the right time for me.
It's like Joe Burrow coming to LSU. It was just business. It was just business.
Yeah, I was going there for golf. It was kind of my year to see what I can do.
Was there anything or any advice that came from Ryan or another teammate that stuck out as something that you still use today, whether it's technique or, you know, how you play certain shots or putting? Is there anything that sticks out from that time?
No, not so much in like that sense, but there was one thing that Coach said to me one time in qualifying and I was like, holy shit, that makes so much sense. Like, he was like, you know, it never hurts to go put 3-4-unders or four 3-unders together in like qualifying. Like, you're going to earn your spot. And like, I think a lot of times in qualifying, you're like, I got to go shoot a 7-under today. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I got to get off to a good start. And I think it's like the same on tour too, where like, you know, Corn Ferry Tour, maybe not, you need to go shoot 6-under every day. But like on tour, if you go shoot 3-under every day, you know, you're going to be in a good spot and you go get hot one day. And it was just like, it simplified it to where like there wasn't as much pressure to on every shot of like, I have to execute or else I'm falling behind. It was like, just kind of stay the course and you know, hope to get hot at the right time.
When your senior year started, I guess, or going into this year at Oklahoma, where were you on the PGA Tour U standings? Because obviously when you finished the year as the best player in the Fred Haskins Award winner, when I was surprised to go back and find that you were seventh at the end of the year on the PGA Tour U standings, I was kind of thinking that – I was like scrolling down. I was like looking for your name, and I was expecting you to be either 1, 2, or 3. Did you just start too far back?
I don't know where I started. It was outside the 30 range for sure.
Gotcha.
But honestly, it's funny you say that. Like, finishing seventh was the best thing that ever happened because I didn't – like, I think if I finished – I don't know what would have happened. But, like, I think if I finished top five, I would have gotten Corn Ferry for the summer. Mm-hmm. And I would have gone and played Corn Ferry. But I finished seven, and I had a bunch of sponsor exemptions lined up. So I went and played, like, Travelers, John Deere, all that, and I – played well in those, so that got me Corn Ferry status for next year, and so it like kind of worked out nicely in that sense where like I could have gone and, you know, gotten a couple 20ths or 30ths and that would have been at, you know, first stage of Q school where like I finished in a spot where I got automatically the final stage mm-hmm. from my points for the year, so it kind of worked like it funny enough worked out that way.
What did you think of the whole Corn Ferry Tour season? It's so interesting talking to players that have never traveled and I mean, not to say you haven't traveled, but literally traveled for your job week to week. It feels like the traveling circus, and you've never played that much golf in your life, and you're just trying to figure out how to shoot 6-under every single day like you talked about.
Honestly, the travel part for me wasn't like because I was like I played 12 events on tour that summer, so I kind of got the feel of like
sure.
But I was, you know, we were getting courtesy cars every week, and you know, I definitely got spoiled. And then I'm back to, you know, in the Bahamas and like and figuring it out. But the thing that surprised me with Corn Ferry was like, you know, I had a lot of people tell me like, especially after my start on tour, like they're like, you're gonna be here and like we'll see you back here next year, and like you're gonna breeze through this. And it was really hard. Like, the amount of good players that play good every week on that tour is, I don't think people understand, like you have to go shoot 20-under to get a top five every week. Under might be 18th one week.
You gotta wedge it good and you gotta putt it good.
And like I said, like that was my, you know, stuff I needed to work on. And I definitely got better as the year went on. But like you said, it was just such a long, like, it's such a hard grind of, like, you have to make it all the way to October from, you know, January, whatever. And every week is stressful, especially the last. Like, I wasn't in a spot going into the finals where
Yeah, you finished 23rd, man. Like, you were right there on it.
Well, yeah, I went into it at, like, 26. Whew. So, like, I needed a good week. It was not a shoe-in, you know, finish. And that course, the final course is
Omaha,
not
right?
One that, what?
Wasn't it Omaha?
No, it was Victoria National.
Oh, and they're done
the,
that.
Not this guy, the place you,
this,
not
this
the place
guy's
you
won there.
Not the place you want to be playing. And yeah. I actually played there in Corn Ferry Tour Finals the year before, and I shot a million. So I was like,
been there, done that too.
I had my demons there.
I really don't even know if I've shot in the 70s at Victoria National. I've either shot in the 60s or the 80s. It's boom or bust for me there.
The first year I was playing all right, and I dunked like three in the water on 18.
Easy to do, man. You're just staring at it right in the face there. Gosh, it's a hard tee shot.
I just kind of, you know, I toughed it out that week, but it was not easy.
Oh, man. All right. So when did you make the decision to move to Edmond, right? Is that where you are?
Yeah.
So did that decision come right after your time at Oklahoma, or did you move back somewhere?
I went back to New Jersey because I was kind of gone. I hadn't figured out, like, it all happened so fast. Like, I won the Haskins and then went straight to Canada to play RBC like three days after. So I didn't really even have time to, like, do anything. But then I moved here the first week of the new year after that, and I lived with my buddy Logan for, like, 3 months.
He was counting for you, right, Logan? No?
No. Logan McAllister, he's on Corn Ferry.
Oh, okay, never mind.
We're roommates at OU.
Who was counting for you in Puerto Rico?
My buddy Ryan.
Ryan. Gosh, yeah. I don't know. Felt like Logan. Felt right.
It fits. But yeah, so I moved here. I kind of just said I'm going to move to the place where I know the most people that play golf that are my age.
And is it Oak Tree National? Is that the golf course?
Yeah.
Is it hard?
Very.
So you basically can play a golf course that's going to test you every day, and you have players to compete against. Like, what is it? Is Victor's there, right? Max McGreevy, Austin Eckhart.
Yeah, Quade, Cummins, Logan, and then there's a couple other Corn Ferry guys like Josh Creel, Reen Gibson.
Reen Gibson's there. Wow, yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah, I played on the Corn Ferry Tour with them. Great guy.
Yeah, there's probably 10 guys with status out here, which is for, you know, kind of middle of nowhere Oklahoma. All right, Taylor Gooch is here.
So what's the game? What's the standard game
that you guys usually play? It's usually Banker or Wolf.
Banker.
Yeah.
I've never played Banker, but I've heard it's a good game.
It's good. It's the game where, like, if you play good, you're going to make money. There's nothing worse than playing good.
Yeah.
And you play, you know, Wolf, and then the last three holes you lose $400 and you're up $200 and you're playing good. It's like,
oh, man,
why the hell did I even come out here?
I can't stand when you play good for the first 15 holes, then the order switches up. Next thing you know, you get doubled up on the wrong side. And
we have, like, a perfect finish for, like, chaos here too. So it's like, it's, you know, the classic Pete Dye, 5-3-4 and brutal 3-4 to finish.
What's a good score out there?
Right now, it's like if you go shoot 4 under, like, you feel good about yourself.
Wow.
But like when I first joined, they just switched to Bermuda and we were shooting like 3-4 over and you were winning
firm.
On it.
Just so firm.
Yeah.
And it's windy too. I imagine that that doesn't help.
Yeah, no.
But I imagine life is kind of on the slow side, I would imagine, Edmund. And
For sure, on the slow side.
It's not quite a fast-paced style like maybe New Jersey could get, or at least or New York could get. So what do you guys do on a weekend? Is somebody cooking? What's the deal?
Yeah, it's perfect place to come for, like, when this week I'm off this week. It's like the perfect place to come for a week off because I mosey around, I get my stuff done. And, you know, I cook here and I'll go to the course. Like, the range is literally like 50 yards right there. So, like,
you were just fishing before you came on.
I drove the golf cart out and was fishing. And so we have stuff. And then OKC is like 20 minutes. So if you want to go to a nice dinner,
okay,
go downtown. But usually, like, Austin lives right down the block. Quade lives right down the block. And then Logan lives across the street. So, like, well, someone, if we're all home together, we'll cook. And Quade's usually the barbecue guy.
So, okay, so Quade's the cooker?
Yeah, Quade's the barbecue guy. All right. if we're around.
You just show up and eat? That's your thing?
Yeah, I mean, I try to bring something, but...
yeah, bring a potato salad or something.
Yeah, a store-bought.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe some of the store-bought cookies, too. Just a nice added touch. Well, your rookie year is interesting because... I mean, how would you rate your rookie year? You of course won on the PGA Tour. You won at Myrtle Beach, and the rest of your year, it seemed like you had your moments, but also maybe had some learning to do throughout. So, how would you grade the season? It seems like an interesting one to me.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. Now knowing what I know, I don't know. I don't know even know how I would rate it. I mean, I won, so like
yeah, winning always it plays you. You know, you feel like you know, it accomplished the goal of security, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was a big thing because it was a very stressful year in the fact that, like, you know, the first eight event, like on my number for Korn Ferry, I didn't get into Sony. I didn't get into I had to get a sponsor exemption into Honda. And so, like, stuff that you would normally get into, like, every week I didn't know if I was playing. I was always kind of right on, like, the cusp. So it was like – and I was 23. I thought I was going to be in a great spot.
Yeah. That sucks, so, man. So you're just, like, already kind of pushing and maybe just feeling like you're already behind the eight ball.
For sure. You felt like you started the year – you know, you played half the events that the guys would play. but, you know, then I go and win, and obviously that's like, all right, I'm here. And then I go miss, felt like every cut after that, or finish 40th and you're just like, and you still don't have it. But I learned a lot in the fact that, like, I thought I had to play everything, you know, and I really wore myself out, you know, and I got back from Japan at the end of last year and I was like, I'm done. Like, my hand was hurting me. And I was like, so I thought I was going to be back on the IR with my hand. And I really just was like, all right, I'm taking 3 months or like 3 months and I'm done. Like, and then I kind of got back into this year and I was kind of doing the same thing. I'd play good every once in a while, but I really didn't figure it out. And I really just learned a lot. Like, it was a year of, like you said, a year of learning.
Sure.
Obviously you win, everything's great, but it's like, there's a lot more downs than ups last year.
Oh, after your 3 months off, you didn't go down and play the Slammer and the Squire, did you?
No. No, I was trying to be in Florida in the winter and pre-rip the Band-Aid off.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh, that is too good. Well, I mean, winning obviously gets you in that security blanket of not worrying about status quite as much. And you definitely elevate it to that different category, so you got better tee times. Life on tour is just much cleaner when you don't have to worry about that. And so let's kind of talk a little bit about this year leading all the way up until the U.S. Open, because it seems like you were right on the cusp so many weeks, really, to like kind of getting into contention, but not really getting into contention, but not playing bad enough to consider it a bad week, if that makes sense. Like, tons of like 10 to 25th.
I had a lot of like, all right, that was a good week, but, you know, where like I finished 18th. And it'd be like, you can't really complain about an 18th, but you also like, man, I feel like I'm playing better. I feel like I'm playing better than this.
Like, you could almost go and find like a shot or two. Like,
for sure.
Like, God, like I know I can handle like that simple thing I should have done. Yeah,
for sure. And it was a lot of, now that looking back on it too, I talked with like everyone that I, you know, is a part of my team. And it was like, I played three good rounds and I just couldn't, there was always a fourth round that like, and it would always be, you know, whether it be Saturday, Friday, or like,
Just
I would
one
just
round.
Shoot one under and, you know, or even and be like, damn, I just like, I lost my footing in the tournament a little bit. And then I'd go bounce back with a Sunday and, you know, play good and, you know, finish 18th. But it was like, I just couldn't put it together, but I knew I wasn't doing stuff wrong either. So it was like a funny, you're at the line where you're like, do I switch it all up or do I just keep hammering at it and hope, you know, hope it breaks through?
So how crucial was it for you to qualify for the U.S. Open? By the way, I love that you went old school and went back to the Rutgers bag qualifying up in, was it New Jersey? Is that right?
Yeah.
Love that.
That's where I got through my first time. And so I like just going back home for, you know, for the weekend before. And I know those courses, and, you know, I think my game, you know, is built from those courses. So I knew I could play well, and if I go play good, I can qualify. And it was nice where it's like, you know, last 2 years ago, my college coach caddy for me, I three putted 18 to miss by one.
Ah.
And so I was like, all right, I'm going to get it back this year. And I wasn't going to make my caddy carry the staff bag.
And so how crucial was it, though? You make it into the U.S. Open, and it turned out to be really just a crucial week for you. I mean, anytime you get in a major championship and you feel like you're like part of somewhat of a storyline. I know those four guys were out in front, but
yeah,
you had a good enough week to where you felt like, man, I'm not that far off from contending in a major.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I shot a couple over the first round, but I really didn't feel like I even played that bad.
Those are long rounds. Thursday, Friday.
And then Friday I played amazing. I think I shot like two under or something on Friday. And I was like, all right, I'm right back into it. Like, you go shoot an under par round at one of those, and you're right back into it.
Totally.
And then I followed it up with another one under or two under, and I was like a 10th or something. So I was like, I'm playing. Like, I was playing really good. Like, I was hitting great shots and, you know, not making mistakes. Like, I don't think I made a double all week, which is
that was a key that week.
Yeah. And I just played good. I really didn't have much stress, like, in my rounds. And then Sunday was just a weird day. Like, I felt like I played fine. I hit some wacky shots, but it was also, like, crazy weather.
It was wild weather.
I really didn't feel like I played that bad. It was just kind of one of those rounds that, like, I was, like, just hanging there. And, you know, and it was just – I played good, and I just didn't – you know, I didn't get it all out. But I walked out of there being like, all right, that was a good week.
Did you have to play after the rain delay?
Yeah, I had to play like 8 holes or 9 holes.
So what was your opinion of the conditions?
I mean, it was crazy, but like it was one of those where it was like so wet that you wouldn't get mud balls or anything, but it was just so like it was so wet.
Every step I took, it felt like I was stepping in a puddle.
Yeah, it was very strange, but I don't know, it's just one of like you were just trying to grind it out and hit in the right spot and hope to make it work.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So, all right, so you hop on. Do they do a charter still from the Deer to over to the Scottish? So you hop on the charter going to the Scottish. Where's your mind at on that long flight heading over to the Scottish? Are you in a frame of mind ready to win? Are you feeling any hesitancies about your game at all?
Not really. I mean, it was funny. I was actually first alternate for Scottish that week.
I didn't know that. Holy moly.
I ended up being like 3 in, but still, like, I was debating on where I'm going. But I had a good week at the Deer. Like, I'd played well there in the past and played good. You know, like you said, another one of those, like, T20, played good. You know, one day, kind of, I think the last day I didn't play great. I three putted like the first hole and I was like, oh, here we go. But yeah, I mean, it was a solid week, and I'd had, I don't know, 8 or 9 top 25s in the last like 10, 11 events. I knew I was in a good spot. And I had good vibes from, like, I liked the Scottish tournament. I thought it was fun. Like, there's a couple of us going over there and we're going to go hang out, and we were playing North Berwick on Tuesday. So it's just like one of those, it was very like casual, laid back, fun week. And
what'd you think, North Berwick?
I played last year as well. It's very cool. Like,
I love it.
Yeah, it's just so much fun. It's so different.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that when they designed that place that they could look that far and ahead in advance. And like so many of the template holes we use in modern architecture is from that golf course. It's just bizarre to me, the whole experience.
Yeah, it's funny. It's just like, it is like a bizarre golf course.
Like, how do they know?
Yeah, it's so much fun to play.
definitely. So what is it, the hole with the little rock wall? Is it 13? I don't
yeah, 13.
I can't remember what it's called. It's got a certain name. Did you drive it up there next to the green and just like
yeah, we hit it like next to the wall and just popped it over the wall and knocked it close. But
it's such a it feels like you're almost like in a putt-putt situation. Like
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's so odd. Well, so you had played the Renaissance Club the year before. So it wasn't your first time around that track. That had to be helpful showing up to a Lynx golf course, knowing how it was going to play.
For sure. I mean, I missed the cut the year before, but I thought it was an awesome course. Like the whole thing is cool. The event's awesome. And it's just like a fun golf course. I know everyone says it's not like true links or whatever, but
I don't mind it. Except the 10th. They need to blow up the 10th. They need to blow up the 10th
golf course to play.
Blow up the 10th green.
Yeah, that one's a little funky, but it worked out well for me that week. So.
I'm sure it did. A lot did that week. It was unbelievable watching you play. Didn't you have like a 62? Was it a 62 or like a
61 Saturday? On Friday.
Okay. So you're heading into the weekend and you got to be thinking to yourself, I could not be in a better spot, but where were the nerves at just heading into your Saturday round? Like, did you feel comfortable heading into the weekend?
Yeah. I mean, I knew I was playing well, obviously trying to follow up a 61 is always hard. And, totally. Like those rounds are always seem to be the hardest following up a good round. And it was weird. Like I was last group off and we teed off at like 4, which was like, it's so hard. Like, that's been the hardest thing of like playing well, honestly, is like those rounds are so hard to like be ready for because you're trying to kill time all day and try not to do much. And then it's like, bang, 4 o'clock. All right, here I go. Like, I got to go play and your day's almost over. And it's like,
it's just getting started at 4.
Yeah. So like it was weird in that sense, but I played good. I was very nervous, but I also felt good about my game and I think I shot even or something like that, but it was like, it was one of those where if I birdied like 16 coming in, which is the par 5, like I would have been like, all right, that was a good day. Like, and I still walked off the course being like, all right, I'm still in a great spot.
You had a great cushion heading into that Saturday round. So I got to ask you about Sunday. How difficult was it? Kind of keeping in your own lane that day, knowing that you're in the final group with Rory McIlroy and that every single person at that place is going to want to see Rory get the job done. So was that difficult for you feeling like it was an away game or did it kind of heighten your focus a little bit more?
I think it heightened my focus a little bit in the terms that like in the fact that it was very it was very nice to play with Wyndham and as well. Like I've become friendly with him and his caddy's really good friends with my caddy. So we were talking all day and and honestly we talked with Rory too for most of the day and then it was very like I felt good. I was honestly less nervous Sunday than I was Saturday for whatever reason, but I got off to a decent start. You know, I was a couple under through, you know, 6 or 7 and I was in a zone where like, all right, I'm going to play good today. Like as long as I don't mess up and let the moment get to me, it was going to be a good day. And once I got to like 13 and 14, it started like the crowd started turning to where it was like, we really don't want you to win. Like openly rooting against me. Like, but
and,
it was,
and you
like,
hear the chirping
for sure. It's hard not to. Yeah. So that was like, but I still felt good. Like, you know, at that moment, you know, like, all right, I'm doing something right. Like, you know, I've got a lead. Like people don't want me to win. Like I'm in a good spot. And then the whole rules official thing happens.
Yeah.
And that was interesting.
For the people that didn't get a chance to watch, what exactly happened?
So we were waiting all day, and then we had a long 11th hole. Like Rory hit it in the trees, had to punch out. Like we were all grinding for pars, and it took a while. And then they warned us on 12. They were like,
par 3.
Hey, like just you know, here's a pace warning, but pick it up, like. So we have 6 holes left and we're like, all right, well, like we got it. And then we get to 15 and they're like, we're individually timing you, Chris. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
would you consider yourself to be a slow or fast player? Where would you find yourself? You think?
I'm not, I think I'm fast, but then once I get in like the moment, like when I know it's like crunch time, like I definitely am not fast, but I'm not like, I take my time 'cause it's important.
Yeah.
But like at that point, we have four holes left. And knowing what I know now, the TV coverage didn't matter because they reran it for another like 2 hours after. So I was like, and then we were off the clock on 16. I was like, what the hell is that?
Okay.
So it was like very.
Still like some home cooking, huh?
For sure. For sure. And so I knew like, I felt like it was honestly a great day where like I was so comfortable and I was playing well and like you knew something had to go wrong like that day.
And that was the curveball that like yeah, that you never could prepare for mentally. Yeah. Like you could do every bit of mental training to start the day of like, I want to prepare for every bad situation that could happen just so that when you get into that uncomfortable situation, you can handle it. But nothing can sometimes can prepare you for the unexpected. So how were you able to like kind of click in? Was it
it was more of like, you know, screw this guy. I'm going to go win this thing now because of this guy.
There you go.
And it really turned to like, it changed my whole focus of like trying to take down Rory into like, screw this guy. Like,
it probably like helped.
Honestly, it did. But it was just very like, it kind of like, I was in a comfortable spot. I was probably just cruising along. And then I got to like, all right, you know, like, this is it. Like, this is my time to like, if I'm not going to let this rules official like take this away from me kind of thing.
Well, you obviously go and get the job done. And it was so fun to watch you win. And especially in a group like that, it just has to add to the confidence. And you always wonder going into the next week, which is you end up qualifying, obviously getting into the Open Championship. And so most people would think, okay, the tank is empty. Like the guy just had, you know, his first really big win. The expectations for Chris of the Open Championship are, well, we don't know. He hadn't played an Open. So heading into it, were you like, all right, I'm playing really good golf. I think I'm ready to contend in this major championship. Or did you just kind of let the week come to you?
I tried to do a good job of letting the week come to me. I took Monday all the way off.
That's smart.
Like, early travel day, and I didn't sleep at all. I didn't even do anything. No partying or anything. I just like, you're just sitting in your bed, and you're like, how the hell do I fall asleep after all that?
You're so wired because the tee time's at 4, man. Like it's
and like I got back to the hotel like 10, and I just sat in my room for like 4 hours and just tried to like process what just happened, but. Yeah, and then get up there Monday and really just took it easy knowing that, you know, my game's in a good spot and just try to see the course, you know, a little different conditions but not crazy different and just go out there and be ready for Thursday.
Yeah, well, you were, and it turned out to be a really great week. So how would you sum up? I was really most impressed, I think, just with how well you played on Sunday. Just seemed like, you know, a day that seemed to be very, very important for many reasons, that you really stood up and answered the bell.
Yeah. It was at a point where like, you know, I put two good rounds together before that on Friday and Saturday, and I was getting comfortable with the course and what was coming. And I don't know, I knew I was playing well and you know, there's no real reason, and I knew I was in a good space and controlling my like my mental with the week past and that current week, and yeah, it was fun. I you know, we were the group in front of Rory over there, which was bananas, and
sure,
and it was just like it was fun.
You played with Hatton.
It was much more.
No, you played with Harris. You played with Harris.
Yeah, I played with Harris, which was great. Like he was very. We talked all day, and he actually had my old putting coach Ramon caddying for him. So it was just like a fun. Fun pairing. He was playing well. I was playing well. We were kind of going back and forth. And then he snuck a bomb in on 16.
Oh, man. I was sitting there watching that because I was thinking, like, you know, if Chris is able to squeak out a solo second here, how big that would be from a point standpoint.
I'm
sitting there watching, and then Harris makes that putt. I was like, oh, man. Yeah. They got like this is a mini match going on up here. They're both points for different reasons. Like Harris is trying to get inside the top six. Chris is obviously talking about Ryder Cup points, trying to get it, you know, further in to where he's inside the top 12. So I imagine like that's going through your head too, trying to get.
Yeah, for sure. Like it kind of got to the point where it was going to be one of us like finishing second or tied second or third. Like,
yeah.
And I didn't do much wrong. He just made, you know, great. He made a bomb on 16 and then he made a great birdie on 17. And I kind of got a little unlucky on 17 where I think my ball like hit the right side of the fairway and rolled all the way to the left, and I had an impossible angle, and he made a great putt. And but I mean, if you told me Monday morning with how I felt and like, you know, you're gonna finish solo third, I would have been like done going home.
Was it kind of annoying though that that Scotty Scheffler didn't give you guys like just a chance to like feel like it was close, you know, like when he starts out birdie in the first and really just kind of shutting down the golf tournament in the first like five holes?
Yeah, but it made it, it was also never going to be like, I don't know. I didn't really care if I won, but I wasn't in a spot where it was like much pressure either.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice.
Just playing golf, having fun.
Yeah. We were just playing and I was trying to finish as high as I could. And I knew like at that point, I think I was like 38th or something in FedEx.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, let's try to like solidify top 50 this week and put a good week together. And then, yeah.
You're up in the low 20s now, if I remember.
I think I'm 20 now.
Yeah, 20 now because you've had a good week at 3M. That's right. So that's the other one too. The 3M one cracked me up because there is somebody that put out that Chris Goddard's not going to have a good week at the 3M. Yeah. And then you clap back pretty quick after the week, which that's what Twitter's all about. Like if you're going to write an article, if you put it out there and
you say that and if I see it, I'm like – But also, I totally expect if I say something, someone out there will be like, "Hey, you suck this week." Like,
totally, no, it goes both ways.
Yes,
And you could understand the argument, man. Like you've been on such a great run.
Oh
and,
yeah, for
and the,
sure. Like
the tank had to be pretty empty.
I was exhausted all week. Like I had Monday we kind of got stuck. I got stuck one more night in Ireland.
Oh man,
and then.
Do you think about withdrawing at any point?
No, because I knew at that point I wasn't going to play Wyndham.
Okay.
So I was like, let's just tough this week out. I'm playing good. Like, let's go put a good finish together and get out of here. But then our pro-am got canceled on Wednesday, which was like the biggest blessing in disguise. and then
just watching Netflix just for an afternoon. Yeah. Just chill.
Yeah, and then it was really a grind of a week. Like I played great on Thursday, but then I really was just trying to like survive the week. It was hot and I definitely wasn't playing as great as I was the previous weeks, but to be expected. It was hard to keep it up, and I felt like I had a really solid week to cap off the 3 weeks.
Yeah, I imagine if you even had all the energy, you probably could have given it just a little bit more there at the end. It of course was a great week, but as we head and flip the page to the end of this interview, you have a lot, of course, on the docket coming up. Three playoff events, talking Memphis, BMW, and then hopefully Tour Championship. You're in a great spot, obviously, at 20th in the FedEx Cup. And then at the end of September, of course, the Ryder Cup. And all of a sudden, you're kind of the darling that's kind of earned its way in a position to have a chance to make that team. So are you a person that, of course, acknowledges what's in front of you, but also isn't like a big goal setter? Or is that something that like you write on a whiteboard on your front door before you head out to work in the morning? What's kind of the way you approach this thing?
I'm not a big goal guy. I really just try to take each week as its own kind of thing, which it is. But you know, I'm not starting the year being like, I gotta make East Lake, like,
sure, okay,
you know, or else my season's a failure. Like, I really just want to try to focus. And now I'm at a point where like, all right, East Lake is my goal. But like, if I go play, focus really good on Memphis and play a good week in Memphis, then it takes care of, you know, a bunch of other things. So,
right.
I mean, I'm not, you know, at this point, like if you, like 3 weeks ago, we would be having a totally different interview as well. Like, I'm just trying to make the playoffs and, but now I'm at a point where like I'm playing, I feel like I have nothing to lose where I'm at now. But I'm not going to go out there and play like a maniac. Like I'm going to try to take the course how it gives me. But I'm trying to look forward to these next 3 weeks and make my way to East Lake, hopefully.
Oh, have you allowed yourself at least to you know, picture yourself, whether it's at the Tour Championship or playing in front of a crowd at the Ryder Cup that obviously would feel like a home crowd to you being a guy from New Jersey. Is that something that you've allowed yourself to get to just mentally, just to try to picture yourself in a position to be at that spot?
I mean, I would be lying if I said I didn't think about it.
But it's human. It's human nature.
Yeah, but I'm also in a spot where I have to go play good these next couple of weeks if I want any chance of even being considered. So there's, like I said, but I have nothing to lose. I'm hopeful that I go play good these next couple of weeks and I, you know, throw my name into the mix. But if I go play okay and, you know, hopefully make it to East Lake still, but like if it doesn't happen, then I still had a great year.
Yeah, it's been a great year. That's a great way to end this interview because it has been fun to watch you, Chris, because watching you go on this run at the end of the summer and in Winx Golf, which is, by the way, I've found that the Open Championship, I think, is probably my favorite major. Gosh, it's just so fun over there, the golf courses, and of course, watching you do well was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's been fun, and the Open's a special one.
Well, I'm sure you got to get to dinner too, and best of luck maybe catching some fish outside over at Oak Tree National, and hopefully you're not on the wrong side of any of the Wolf games before you head over to Memphis next week.
Yeah, luckily no one's home this week, so I can I can avoid some losing.
Good stuff, buddy. All right, thanks, Chris.
Awesome.
See you soon.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first level time fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people at YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the